you.
Well, I see a lot of familiar faces. It's good to see you. For those I haven't met before, I trust that you find this weekend of some benefit. So I want to speak a little bit about this weekend, which is, I think, a slightly different format than some of you may be used to, although if you've done weekends with me before, it would be quite familiar to you. Just to check on the sound, can everybody hear me all right? You'd like it a little bit louder, is that possible? Now I'll try, is that better? If you have trouble hearing, you may need to make some adjustment around sitting a little bit closer. I think there's something quite special about holding a kind of urban retreat in the midst of our lives. I think many of you are probably used to the format of going away on retreat, you know, and it's very secluded and it's very cloistered and, you know, you leave your life behind, so to speak. But I think doing an urban retreat, undertaking an urban retreat, is far closer to the rest of our lives. And I think there are lessons that we learn in this format that are particularly helpful. I mean, one of those lessons, I think, involves how we make these reorientations in our minds about moving between stillness and activity and back to stillness. I think coming here, one of the questions we ask, or is useful to ask, is, you know, what would I need to put down to be here most wholeheartedly? And I think when most people examine that question, they're immediately drawn into the field of how many habits it would be helpful for us to put down. You know, it might be the habits of busyness, the habits of planning, the habits of judgment, the habits of overdoing. You know, much of this is actually, we realize, quite optional. You know, for myself, every year I take up a sort of annual theme for an investigation. And one year I took up the theme to actually renounce hurrying. And it was actually so delicious, you know, to realize that not hurrying didn't mean I couldn't move quickly, but how much hurrying was actually a state of mind, you know, and a state of being over full and leaning forward. And actually, it was actually so delicious that I've never been tempted to take it up again. You know, it was a definite kind of, oh, you wake up call. So you might think for yourself, what is it helpful for you to put down in order to cultivate the optimal inner conditions for stillness, for learning, for listening, for sensitivity, for awareness? Then the other question that goes along with that is what would I need to cultivate in order to be here most wholeheartedly? And I think that's an equally significant question. Do I need to cultivate more wakefulness, more patience, more alertness, more energy, more investigation? And I think these are questions not just for a retreat. These are actually questions for our lives. So a retreat in the midst, you know, an urban retreat, we really become aware of how much a retreat space really rests upon our intentionality. You know, without that intentionality, we could be in the most perfect, ideal conditions and still just be engaged in our own preoccupations and obsessions. So we call it's a collective intentionality. And the way that we actually create a retreat space together through that collective intentionality. One of them certainly I would like to really suggest that we hold this day in silence. You know, we have so much time in our lives for conversation and communication, and we have so little time for silence. And the kind of silence that I would encourage in a retreat is not a kind of withdrawn silence. You know, I know many of you who've done retreats before have, you know, heard instructions about not making eye contact, you know, being silent, going inwardly. I never give those instructions anymore. When I think about the most common tools of punishment in childhood development, you know, it's the withdrawal of communication and the withdrawal of eye contact, you know. There's a wonderful Tibetan saying that says, wherever my gaze may fall, may it be filled with tenderness and respect. And I think that is a kind of guideline that we can really adopt, that the silence is one of warmth, it's one of friendliness, it's one of allowing people to be visible to us. And, of course, I really echo the David's encouragement, please turn off your phone. You know, we can, the world really can live without us for just a few hours. And, you know, just the addictive mechanism of people's engagement with cell phones these days is, you know, the most ideal way to undermine your capacity for sustaining attention. Just to acknowledge that. It's so counter to what we're trying to do in the practice when we go beyond pragmatic use of undermining our capacity to sustain attention. So please turn them off. So a little bit around the format of this weekend. I hope it's no surprise to any of you that this is actually a study contemplation retreat. If it is a surprise, I'm afraid that's too bad. Because I really have no intention of changing that format. So that means that we have periods of practice, and then we have, you know, some longer periods where we're going to be focusing on a particular theme over these 2 days. There will be time for questions or reflection. I really want to encourage you to think of this not just of you being a sort of passive recipient of my monologue, but to really be engaged, to really think about what does this mean for me? What does this mean to me? How do I understand this? You know, what questions do I have about this? So I'll be making some time for those kind of reflections. And the theme that I want to really reflect on over this weekend is the theme of awakening and forgetting. If we consider the real heart of the Buddhist teaching is about being awake. The word Buddha translates as one who is awake. It's that simple. But we really see that awake is very much a spectrum word, isn't it? I mean, on its lowest level, it basically means we're not asleep. So I would encourage you to at least reach for that bar this weekend. That we're actually not asleep. But it has many more connotations than that. You know, it means, it's sometimes described as waking up from a dream. Waking up from a way of moving through our life where we feel somewhat lost in confusion, bewilderment, not sure of where we're going, not sure of our sense of aspiration or values. This sense of what the Buddha describes as avidya or confusion. So we're waking up from that. And this is a process. It is a process. On its deepest level, the Buddha describes, you know, liberation as full, unshakable liberation of the heart or unshakable wakefulness. That's the other end of that spectrum. So we have this whole range from just simply not being asleep to the liberation of the heart. But this is a process. And I think it is so important for us in our lives to reflect on what it is that makes us forgetful. What is it makes us forgetful of our aspirations, forgetful of our values, forgetful simply of being here. The forgetfulness of being disembodied, dissociated. So I want to look at those elements that lead to that forgetfulness and how we cultivate the wakefulness. I mean, traditionally in Buddhist psychology, this is put out quite simply, the five, what are called the five hindrance factors, which is a terrible translation, are the major factors of forgetfulness, the major factors that undermine intentionality, that sabotage intentionality. And the major wakefulness factors are called the bojangas, or the limbs, or the supports of awakening. So I want to go through these over this weekend, to reflect on them, to see how what they mean for us, how we really stay close to that aspiration that we have in our lives to be an awake human being, one who is responsive, empathic, insightful, creative, wholehearted. These are, you know, according to the Buddha, these are possibilities of every human consciousness, of every human mind. They're not reserved for a special elite group of people. And in a way, the path is one of cultivating and bringing to fruition those possibilities. So what I'd like to, I don't actually have a schedule for the weekend, so we're going to play it a little bit by ear. Lunch will be around 12:30, but I thought that we would begin the day, arrive on the retreat, by having a period of sitting and then a period of walking, before I sort of launch into my theme, just to have this sense of what it means to arrive here in a place of wakefulness. So if you could find a posture for yourself, I know sometimes a posture for yourself that is an embodied intentionality. You know, intention is not a thought. It is something that we actually embody. How much we have an embodied wakefulness, an embodied sense of balance and uprightness. And just sensing the body sitting. Sensing where your body might be holding places of tension or tightness in your shoulders, in your face, in your belly. What it is to soften those places. And to sense the aliveness of the body just now. Touching the ground, the cushion, the chair. Touch of your clothing, the air on your skin. Cultivating that first step of mindfulness, of directing your attention. Directing your attention to sense, to feel the body sitting, the life of the body breathing. And settling your attention, letting the thoughts, the images, just sit in the background, and just settling your attention in the body breathing just now. And sensing, feeling the body. Touching the ground, the cushion, being touched by. Feeling the body. Expanding, relaxing with each breath. And appreciating the aliveness of the body, appreciating the taste of sensitivity. And calming anything that is agitated in body and mind. is exploring what it is to integrate, to unify body, mind, present moment, through the intention and the attention we bring to being present within this body just now.